It's never as bad as you expect, and you can't let it eat you up. And if it does, you're not an entrepreneur. Get out now, because you'll never survive. You'll be running scared. And I don't know about you, but I'm assuming that a lot of the times when you had to make decisions, you had to be decisive and you had to take risk. Hey everyone, it's Norm Farrar, aka The Beard Guy here, and welcome to another Lunch with Norm, the e-commerce and Amazon FBA podcast. Today, we're going to be discussing lessons learned from scaling 8 brands, how our guests effectively managed time to scale brands, the key lessons learned by building these brands, and what drives our guest to be a lifelong learner and continually expand his knowledge. Welcome to another Lunch with Norm, the e-commerce and Amazon FBA podcast. And sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee. Let me grab one here. And we're all set. Welcome, Rob.
Hey, Norm. Good to see you again.
And you too. It's been a long time. In fact, by the way, my friend, you remember when we were in Hawaii? So yep. The Illuminati. Right.
Yeah.
So the Illuminati's not what you think, guys. Don't run away. It's the Helium 10 Elite now. So it was called the Illuminati until they got some flack on that name. We were walking down, you, me, Dave Kettner, and you said something about, the importance of an HST code? And I said, no, what is an HST code? And you say, you've never heard of an HST code? I said, no. Well, since that time, my partner in the sourcing company, Afolabi, Oracon, we've not only have we seen how important it is, but the time within probably a year or two after we met, he saved $300,000 a year just on one product he was bringing in. And that's we've awesome. Got this, yeah, we've got this thing now called Tariff Terminator, where,
oh, really?
Yeah, where we go out there and find the best tariff HST codes. 80% of Amazon sellers have the wrong code. And finding the right code, on average, he's saving $7,000 per Amazon seller on average. It's crazy. So you're the first person. I just wanted to bring that up. Because I remember that conversation, walking down to the event, and we're sitting there just walking away with you, me, Dave Kettner, and you mentioned that. And so
awesome.
I've got to thank you, because Tariff Terminator would not exist without Rob Greed.
Well, that's good to hear. That there's a good example for the audience between an idea and implementation. So there's one idea that Norm took and executed on it, which honestly, everything's about execution, Norm. You and I both know this.
Right. Yeah, no, that's 100%. It's another good idea we talk about a lot here is the power of networking and why we go to these events, whether it's just a meetup, a free meetup, or it's one of Kevin King's crazy expensive, meetups.
Well, you know, what's funny about that, Norm, is I hadn't done any expensive meetups. This is back like in 2016 or so. And I talked to my wife about it. And I said, hey, there's Jason Fladlein was putting on this event down in Cabo. And I said to my wife, I said, it's 10 grand for a ticket. I said, do you think I should go? And she said, I don't think so. You know, I've been doing Amazon for about a year and a half at that point. She goes, that seems like a lot of money. You're going to get value out of it. I said, no, you're right. And 3 days later, I went to her and I said, hey, honey, I bought a ticket. I'm going to Mexico. And she started laughing. She goes, you better get value out of it. And that was a catalyst for me to see a higher level of Amazon seller that I had zero experience with. And that was the catalyst to start building out my network. We started the mastermind because of that. Pablo and I came out of that being friends and started the mastermind that we have based on that. That was a huge catalyst for me from the networking perspective. That led to speaking at Illuminati in a roundabout way. It was a great experience. So I highly recommend people go get old school, Norm, belly to belly with people.
Exactly. And by the way, now that you mentioned that event in Cabo, the person that introduced me, so Afolabi went to that event, but there was also Christine and her husband yeah. Matthew went, right? Yeah. You know Christine and Matthew?
Oh, yeah. They live here in Arizona.
So Christine reaches out and says, hey, I know this guy. I met him at in Cabo. His name's Afolabi. You guys should talk. All of a sudden, 6 months later, we're partners in a business because of an event that he went to. And Christine was part of our AMZ and Beyond, which you were part of at one point. Yeah. So anyways, just so far off topic, but it's such good information about networking and where you can go and how you can build your business. But I think the key here is exactly what you said. You could sit there and you can have all the great intentions of the world in the world, but if you don't act on it, they just are great intentions. They never come to fruition.
Well, this is actually it goes along with this conversation, Norm. I mean, this is a core fundamental belief in scaling brands. It's really difficult to do it. It's almost impossible to do it by yourself. Build that network of people that when I have a problem with something, I don't call Amazon. I call friends or I pop it in the WhatsApp group, right? That's the only way to solve difficult problems.
Yeah, exactly. And it's that network. I don't know about you, Kevin and I late last night. Oh my God. So, we have this other company. So, it's late, our partner's in Hong Kong. So we were just talking about exactly that, you know, just, Rob, you know, we met back, you know, in the Illuminati, right? Since that I've become very old. And I get a great idea and I can't get into politics. I get a great idea and then I just flake out. I forget what I said. You know, 2 seconds from now, I'll remember it.
That's all right. We'll keep moving
this along. Incredible statement.
That's okay.
But anyways, I'm old. I have an excuse. All right. So let's talk about this. We all love building brands. I love building startups. That's what I've done forever. But you've got this really incredible track record. You've built 8 brands. And that's why I thought, you know, this would be a great idea to get you on here. And let's talk about how you balance. That's the key. You build a company. Most people, like their whole personal life can go down go down the tank, you know, because they don't do this properly. How do you balance between entrepreneur, your other, like acting as a consultant or a family? How do you do that?
Yeah, it's a challenge. I think we all struggle because you can't be a great entrepreneur without having that passion and that ambition.
Right.
And so it's a trade-off, right? It's like, all right, do I put more time into my business, my family, my health, right? A lot of people let their health go. So for me, it's really around compartmentalizing, picking the hours where my kids and my wife aren't available, let's say it's school time, and really working my butt off and being hyper productive during those hours. I mean, I still coach my kids' sports. We travel, we leave, you know, I live in Phoenix, it's hot. So we leave the entire summer every year. We leave for 2 months. So we travel during spring break, fall break. It's really getting to that level of understanding, all right, what do I really value in my life? Business is great. I love solving problems and creating brands, but the honest answer is, how do I stay healthy? How do I have great relationships? And then how do I also create wealth at the same time and trying to balance those three? And the biggest thing I've learned is just integration. Honestly, Norm, my daughters are 15 and 13 now. I think they're unemployable, to be honest with you. I mean, they're ready to start their own businesses. They've grown up in this. So they've, you know, been to China with me. They've experienced a lot of this. They've gone to different meetings in other cities with me. I mean, they're learning as I've gone through this process. So I try to integrate as much as possible. I started a brand with their names. I mean, you just bring them into the business, which makes it fun for me and also fun for them.
Yeah, that's a great point. Seeing how your family, like Kelsey, he's pretty much grown up with this. And I think it would probably be tough for him. I don't know if it's unemployable, but I think it would be really hard to work for anybody when you have this sort of entrepreneurial, you grew up around an entrepreneurial dad. You know, I know it was tough for me. My dad was a crazy, crazy, you want to talk about serial entrepreneur, crazy entrepreneur. I think at one time he had 20 or 30 companies going at one point. Like, it was crazy. But I grew up around that and I knew that I couldn't work for anybody. Like, I think I might've worked 3 months a year for over my entire life for somebody else. you know, other than the armed forces. I was in the military. So yeah, that I can't be an entrepreneur in the military. Well, I could, but they wouldn't like it too much. So being this entrepreneur, you talk about health. You talk about me being that family man. It's tough because during this cycle, there's always the kick between the legs. And how do you not bring that home? How does that not affect your family?
That's a great question. I think I've become a little numb to it. I've been kicked between the legs too many times, Norm. Yeah. It just doesn't hurt quite as much anymore.
Yeah.
But I've really accepted it. I mean, you know, I don't know where I got this saying, but it's like, take all the things that you're worried about that you can't control and write them down and then just cross them all off because there's nothing you can do about it. So, I mean, anybody that's ever sold on Amazon, I got a stupid issue I'm dealing with Amazon right now that's just insane, right? It's part of the game. And that's how I see it. It's just a game. There's some rules we don't like and there's some rules we do like. But these are the rules of the game, and we're going to do your best of what you can control and what you can't control. So for me, I don't really get worked up about a lot of things anymore, to be honest with you. I mean, my brands have been attacked. ASINs have been attacked. I've been shut down for no reason. I mean, all sorts of stuff has happened that, you know, a lot of people get freaked out about. And don't get me, I don't love those experiences. Don't get me wrong. I don't love them. But to be honest with you, it just kind of becomes normal. You got to understand that it's never a straight line up. It's always a bumpy road in how you're growing. And then just reflecting on when those things happened. Did I cause that? Could I have done something different to stop that? What could be the situation? What could we do to prevent that from happening next time? And that's always the approach. And just say, can we learn from this so we don't let it happen again? And we don't want to repeat the same mistake, or we don't want the same issue to arise in the future.
Yeah, that's so important. I was talking about my newsletter. So this week's article was about a grandfather clock company that I started. I can't hold a hammer, but I outsourced everything, right? The Craftsman, everything. That was my first company outside of high school. And NAFTA came in and overnight destroyed my business. I couldn't compete with Herman Miller, biggest clock manufacturer in the States. One shift. They would produce more than I could produce in a year. So it was uncontrollable. But what happened leading up to it, sleepless nights, knowing that I would be in debt, like I was in debt, how would I pay this back? And in fact, it was only $40,000. I literally had a bloody ulcer. Wow. I couldn't sleep. This thing affected me so bad. Now, if I take a look at it, especially for anybody that's new getting into Amazon or anything that you're doing, a lot of the times these stresses that you have, this is 30 some odd years ago, this happened. Now, it would just bounce off me. It's never as bad as you expect, and you can't let it eat you up. And if it does, you're not an entrepreneur, get out now, because you'll never survive. You'll be running scared. And I don't know about you, but I'm assuming that a lot of the times when you had to make decisions, you had to be decisive and you had to take risk.
Yeah. 100%. I always think about, this is a Jeff Bezos thing. Is it a one-way decision or a two-way decision, right? A two-way decision is I can reverse course and come back to the other side if I want to. We make those very fast. Mm-hmm. A one-way decision is something that we choose that we can't really come back from. There's no way back to reverse it, right? Those that we spend a little bit more time and a little bit more critical thinking on. But I think about it that way, the one way and two way decisions. And I'm incredibly decisive. And the other thing, Norm, I think a lot of people be decisive. And then once you get new information, reevaluate your decision. It's very hard for a lot of people to change their mind, right? I picked this path and I get new information, but I'm kind of entrenched in this old way of doing things. You've got to be flexible. You've got to be dynamic in the way that you think about things.
Yeah, that is really, it's so true. Decisive, flexibility, and there's lots of books out there. But that's definitely one trait, which is going to lead to my next question. So some of the action steps or some of the traits people have to, what are some of the traits that you have to, what am I trying to say? What are some of the traits of an entrepreneur that wants to scale a business?
I mean, first of all, I think that being an entrepreneur is a recipe for an extraordinary life. So that's mm-hmm. a core belief that I have. Secondly, I think it comes down to confidence. I'm in Dan Sullivan's strategic coach program. And one of the things he talks about all the time is entrepreneurs must protect your confidence, their confidence. If you don't have confidence in your decision-making or what you're doing, it's really, really hard to continue down that path, right? You've got to believe in what you're doing. I'm not saying being passionate necessarily, but you have to have confidence in your ability, your team's ability, the path that you're going down, because that confidence, as we all know, you said earlier, get kicked between the legs, it will waver sometimes. You're going to get kicked and you're going to have to be able to maintain that level of confidence. So I'd say confidence, persistence is another big one, just continuing to persist, because if you have confidence and you have persistence, I rarely know anybody in my lifetime who has not had success, that has been persistent, smart, and believed in themselves. It just doesn't happen, Norm. I mean, they're going to have bumps along the way, but everybody I know that those has those characteristics has some level of success.
And one of the other things with success, we all talk about our networks, but it really is who you're closest to. Like my ring of five people are probably the most positive entrepreneurs that there are out there. And I get to go to them. I could talk to them. They'll tell me, you know, oh, that's a dumb decision. Have you really thought it out? Or, and there's a group. So you talk about Dan Sullivan. Dan Sullivan, I think he's out of Toronto, but he was part of YEO way back in the day. I was part of YEO way back in the day, and our forum still meets. 28 years later, our forum from that still meets. Now, that's what I would call my board of advisors. I have an email on my in my inbox right now from my group. I had a question, and they're all ready to answer me. And so I want to talk about that for a second.
Yeah, please.
Is the importance of these types of networks, organizations, associations that you got to be part of. Dan Sullivan's strategic coach is an excellent program, but YEO, now called EO, or a lot of the guys that were in my forum are now YPO, which is a young a professional organization, just had slightly different criteria or big criteria. But let's talk about that. How do you leverage that?
So I think about it, first of all, what am I looking for in that group, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm in two groups. Well, technically I'm in three groups. I'm in MDS, which is a lot, you know, 550 people. Those are Amazon sellers that have sold at least $1 million a year. And it's verified. It's a great group. I'm going to the event next week in Vegas. That's a really strong group, but that's not quite that close knit group you're talking about. So then I'm in another group, strategic coach, what we talked about, which is great. That's more big picture tools, saving time, getting your life back, organizing everything. I love strategic coach. I've been in it for 4 years. I go to the one here in Santa Monica. And then the other group that I'm in is what Pablo and I started a mastermind about 7 years ago called No BS. And the difference in that group is that is a core group of Amazon entrepreneurs that we've all grown together. We've added a few people have left. And that group is our board of directors. So we get together every 4 months. And we go and we share, we do presentations. You have to add value to the group. The biggest thing that, and I encourage everybody to be some type of mastermind in their industry. If you're not part of one or can't find one, go start one. That's what we did. Mm-hmm. And that has been invaluable for us as we've all grown together over the last 7 years. And then we do like a board of directors, Norm. So we'll present what's going on in my business, what's working, what's not working. And everybody else gives feedback and we'll have those hard conversations like, hey, Norm, we don't think that's a good idea. We don't think you should go do that. It's probably outside of your core competence, right? That group has been invaluable to us. The one thing that we did, and for anyone that goes and start their own, I would recommend looking into this. Nobody makes any money off it. And so what that forces everybody to do is bring their value, right? Because a lot of times I've been to these events, you've been to these events where they're really expensive. And sometimes when you pay a lot of money, you sit back and you wait. And that you see people and they're just, I paid all this money, I'm just going to go and take and pull information. We didn't want to create anything like that. So by not making any money, everybody contributes money for the chef and the houses and stuff. We do fun activities. But the reality is it forces everybody to bring their A game. Because if you don't bring value, we ask you to kindly leave the group. So everybody's committed to each other. And that is the best recipe for success, in my opinion.
Yeah, everybody gets something from it, right?
Yep. Yeah, and some guys have sold like So one guy sold his e-commerce business a few years ago, one of the first really big sales in our space. And you know, he's doing more real estate now and NFTs than he has e-com. And he still comes and adds value and he still participates. And it's great to have him in the group because he's talking about starting another e-com brand now.
Yeah. I sometimes that's a little bit scary for people to go out because they've never done it before, but it literally is setting up a meetup and see who comes out. What will weed out? And I think you'll agree with me that if your group has certain standards, policies, culture's huge, then the negative stuff will weed out. Like our WhatsApp group, we talked about this. Kelsey was talking about spammers. We have these idiots. So I shouldn't, we have these people that sometimes come in, think that, and they're doing it all wrong, by the way. This is a rant. Okay. I'm going to go. Kelsey probably said I go down some rabbit holes.
All right.
This is a rant. Here, these people come into a group that have a ton, not a ton. It's a 300 person, 350 people in the group. Nobody's expecting anything. Nobody's expecting sales. They're all blowing it up, helping each other, which is incredible. Then you've got somebody, and like for when we went on the online sellers cruise, for some reason, spammers blew up. And then the other week, spammers all of a sudden came on. I'm sitting here going, you have the opportunity to provide value. Instead, you come in and do what every other idiot spammer does, and you just kill your name. Nobody's going to want to deal with you. And anybody in our network that sees you in any other network is probably going to report you. So why do you have to be like that? Like, add value. And what you're talking about, this board of advisor going in there with no expectations except to share and, you know, receive and give. Give to get.
Yeah. I mean, we're wired the same way, Norm, in that regard. And I try to weed those people out quickly out of my life. You talked about the close network or ring of fire. I mean, those kind of people are not the kind of people I want to spend time with. And, you know, the signs for me, for anyone that's looking for those kind of people, it's tit for tat or quid pro quo, right? It's like, hey, if you show me this, I'll share this trick with you. Anybody that says that kind of stuff to me is out for me. I have no interest in associating people like that. I just try to add value where I can. And I believe in karma, for lack of a better word, Norm. It all comes around, honestly. Yeah. It has for me, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. So we're at the bottom of the hour. And if this is the first time you're tuning into the podcast, we always have a giveaway. It's called the Wheel of Kelsey. And to enter into the Wheel of Kelsey, it's hashtag Wheel of Kelsey, or tag two people, you'll get a second entry. And today, Kelsey, why don't you come on and tell us what the person will win?
All right. Well, we are giving away a press release. Norm, you actually probably know a lot more than me about this.
You're the producer. Come on now.
But we are giving away a press release. If you'd like to take part in the giveaway, make sure you enter hashtag Wheel of Kelsey in the comment sections. And if you take two people, you get a second entry. We'll be announcing the winner at the end of the episode, so stick around for that. And I think that's it.
Yep, the press release is worth $200. It's going out through our premium distribution. And so you'll probably end up with approximately between 200 and 400 media pickups and content pickups, influencers, as well as bloggers. And you'll get the full report. So you'll know exactly how it went. You provide us with the keywords and the topic you want to write about. We'll have our writers write it for you and get it out on the wire. So again, it's worth $200. Hashtag Wheel of Kelsey, tag two people. And Kels, should we do a live with startup, start, scale, exit, repeat?
Yeah, we should.
Okay. So Rob, interesting enough, Dan Sullivan, when he was in Toronto, Colin Campbell was part of my form group. And this is how we became friends. He wrote a book. I'll just put it here. Start, scale, exit, repeat. Mm-hmm. You can put it on the banner if you want, Kels. But he has sold 7, 8, 9-figure businesses. The first time I met him, he had two cows, and he sold that for 9 figures. So two cows for us old guys was a freemium site app, and it was very successful. He's had failures. He talks about in this book, he's had success stories. He just sold .club to GoDaddy, and he's on to another one. He's got a different types of e-commerce brands. Anyways, in the book, he talks about all of his successes and failures. And what I like about it, it's about start, scale, exit, repeat. I grabbed the book here because I wanted to show, and I, you know, old guy forgets things. So start every one of these, start, scale, exit, repeat is broken into four sections. You've got the story, you've got the people, you've got the money and the systems you need to complete each one of these as an entrepreneur. But there's also subcategories. So I'll just give you an example here. So for start, ideas are everywhere, from idea to action, catching the next wave. And he just goes through. It's a 400-page book. It's incredible. I read it, about 2 or 3 months ago. I know a lot of people have gone out and got this. I know Luke. Read it. Drip, I think, just bought it. But it's excellent. And it's got over 200 interviews, including the founder of YEO back in the day. Vern Harnish is in here. The CEO of Reebok is in here. There's a bunch of different interviews. So this is like a reference guide to any social media or any Amazon seller or e-commerce seller. It's a reference guide for you entrepreneurs. So Colin's been on the podcast if you want to check it out. Awesome guy. He's going to be at BDS Hawaii. He's going to be speaking there. And check it out. So if Kels, if you could put the Amazon link in there, it's been number one bestseller for, 20 different categories. And that's, I'll stop there. But it's a good read. Anybody that's read it, can you throw a comment in maybe the comment section? All right. Now we're back. By the way, do you know Colin?
I don't know Colin.
Oh, you should check it out. It's very, really interesting. He went from, he had a $1.2 billion valuation on his one company when he was 28.
Wow.
Yeah. And then failed, lost it all.
Ugh.
Overnight.
Those are the ups and downs we just talked
about. Night.
That's a bigger down, by the way.
A much bigger. That's a plunge. That's a meteor coming to Earth. Yeah. Extinction. Yeah. He made it. He came back and he had 5-10 very successful companies after that. All right. What drives you? Why do you do this crazy stuff?
That's a good question. I'm not a big I call it woo-woo. I'm not a big woo-woo guy, but wife and I did a vision board a couple of years ago, and I came up with kind of a statement of intention, which kind of grounded me and centered me. And mine is I choose a life of growth and learning through playfulness that is successful. So everything I do, start with number one, am I growing, am I learning? Okay, that's it better be a check there. If it's not, okay, then it better be fun. And the third is it going to lead to some type of karma or success down the road? Ideally, I'm choosing everything in my life that's all three of those things. Am I learning something? Am I having fun? And is it leading to success? So that's how, because, you know, it's like when we're young, Norm, we start saying yes to everything. And as we get older and we get more opportunity, we have to work that no angle much better. We have to work that no muscle because we just have too many opportunities, right? It's so many opportunities. It's so easy for us to get distracted. So I kind of use that as my filter to decide whether I want to do something or not.
Yeah, great, great filter. And one of the other things I look at is repeatable tasks or annoying tasks. Also working with your strengths. I hate accounting. I love creativity. I'm an artsy-fartsy guy, right? Not really, but I like aesthetically pleasing stuff, things. So I'll stick with that. And the accounting side, I had to know, but I didn't have to graduate. I'm not a CPA, but I went, I took a course, you know, I took a semester learning my accounting. Then I took Tim Francis's accounting course. You remember that?
Yeah.
Still
yeah,
out Tim, there.
It was great.
Awesome course. I know my numbers. You have to know your numbers, but I can read a financial statement in a second. If you can't, you got to outsource that stuff. And this is why I think back. Yeah. When we met, I was on top of SOPs back then. And like right now, we're pumping it out. We pump out SOPs all the time. And we make sure that, you know, that's something that, first of all, the company believes in. And then second of all, it's followed up. Dan Sullivan taught me that, you know, you've got like just so many crazy things that you can do to scale a company. And one of them is systemization.
You know, to touch on that, Norm, both of those concepts, we have an agreement here on the team.
Yep.
I should never create an SOP. That is not my wheelhouse. I'm a great
editor. You hear that, Kels?
I'm a great editor of SOPs. But if I create an SOP, there's a really good chance I skip four or five steps because I just think, oh, they know how to do this, and I'll skip over steps. So I am not the guy. We know. It's not my unique. Dan talks about unique ability a lot, which is great. I'm a big believer in unique ability. I'm kind of the opposite of you, Norm. I'm a numbers data guy. Like, I enjoy some of the creativity stuff, but that's not my wheelhouse. Yep. Give me a spreadsheet and give me some data, and I love it. I'm good at it, and I love it, right? So I think it's knowing your strengths and your weaknesses and then leaning into the strengths. Dan wrote a great book on this called Who Not How. And so we focus on that. You know, who knows how to do this already that we can employ, contract, project management, service provider, whatever it is, that we don't have that capability on the team right now. It's impossible for us to learn everything about everything, right? And we're not even probably great at all those things anyway, even if we do learn them.
Right.
So I think you make a great point.
Yeah, and there's a book out there called The E-Myth. So yeah. Peter Gerber, loved the book, went through the E-Myth Academy to understand, you know, exactly how to do this, but not just the SOP, but the policy and procedure. And one of the things that I found remarkable, and I fell into this, was that I was so busy, I'd hire somebody and fire them because they couldn't do it as good as I could. And what happened was it fell back on me. After I went through that course, I understood that I was the problem. I didn't take enough time to train that person to do a good job. I didn't give them the tools to succeed. And one of the things that we work on is we train that, let's say it's a senior project manager. We want them to be excellent to train the next level of project managers that come on. They learn, and everybody else is writing SOPs. I love it, except me, you know, everybody else can, but, you know, for review to see if they're working, we got to make sure we quantify them and we update them. But I think that's so important to do. And another point that you brought out, you love data, you know, I'm this artsy fartsy aesthetic guy. We'd make a great partnership because so many partnerships do it the wrong way. They oh wow, we have the same personality, we like, you know, graphics, we fail, big fail, because you need that yin and yang, you know.
100%. Yeah, don't choose a partner that you're in any business that you're the same as. That is just a duplicative skill set, right? And doesn't really grow. It's 1 + 1 = 3, Norm, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I want to, if you could, there's always challenges when scaling. And I want to know some of these challenges that have come up over the years with you. What are some of these battles that you had to fight?
I mean, we've already touched on a few of them. Mm-hmm. Number one, I did way too much by myself in the beginning, right? I didn't hire appropriately and I didn't delegate. That was number one. Number two, I think I spread myself too thin. I think it's very easy for us to get distracted. So focus. It's funny. I tell the team now, if I have to bring up focus, we're not focused, because I shouldn't be I'm the guy that's already want to do 9 different things. If I'm bringing it up, we're not focused, and someone else needs to bring us back together. Right. So we are trying to focus more and more and narrow our focus down, because it's really, really difficult to be excellent across many, many different concepts, right? Or many different brands. In addition to that, also, you mentioned a really interesting aspect of teaching and training somebody you hire, right? So one thing I've learned through Dan, again, strategic coach, is when you hire someone that is below your skill level, we have to train them on our processes and procedures. When we hire somebody who's an expert and above our skill level, they come in and teach us, and they do the procedures and processes. So we are fully on board. And that doesn't necessarily need to be a full-time employee, but TikTok Shops is a great example. We're spending a lot of time in trying to figure out TikTok Shops and how do we capitalize on that. We just went and found a guy who already done it. We brought him as a contractor. He's teaching us. he's bringing the expertise, and then someone on the team is executing. So I highly, highly recommend people to think more about finding the who that already knows how to do it. Bring that person on in some capacity. It could be even just networking or having a conversation. You know, I think, Norm, you and I are probably the who for a lot of other people. And so it's taking that same process and applying it to your business and saying, well, boy, we have an issue with procurement, like supply chain. And who do I get? I don't have anybody on my team who's an expert at that. Well, why don't we find somebody who's been there and done that and is an expert? They come in and they bring and train up our team. And maybe it's a project or maybe it's a full-time basis. That is the way to play the game, in my opinion, now is how do you, I think of myself like as a conductor, right? I'm a conductor of the orchestra, and maybe I've got a weak violin and I need to bring a better violinist in, right? By the way, it's probably a terrible example because I'm not good at music, but maybe I need a better cellist, right? So I want to put the pieces together that are great. I mean, most of the best entrepreneurs are not world-class at each of the individual aspects of the business, but they're great at building that team and pulling the team together of experts. And that's kind of how I see my role now.
You've grown 8 brands. How do you know? First off, I want to talk about how many brands have you started? These are 8 successful brands.
Yeah.
Were there a bunch of duds?
Oh, yeah. But one of my favorite things, Norm, is talk about failures. I love talking about failures because that's where the lessons and learning come in. First of all, I've sold a few brands. So I've sold a few brands through brokers or directly to, I sold one to an aggregator in 21.
Yep.
And then in addition to that, someone that didn't work out. You know, a lot of products, especially we've seen over the last few years where you're manufacturing in China, have a lifespan. And what I mean by that is the Chinese have come in much more aggressively the last few years and they've undercut price. And I think in some categories, it's really difficult to eke out margin. So we had a patio light business, for example. I think I started in 2016, maybe 2017, somewhere in that ballpark. And we were like the number 2 seller of patio lights for a few years. But what ended up happening within a few years is by the time everybody had come in, they were selling it for almost near my cost, right? There was no market left, no margin left. That business, I just sold through and shut it down, right? Hmm. It kind of ran its course, right? So understanding what type of business you're in, does this business, is it an upward trend? Does it have legs for the future? Am I going to be reduced to margin to 0 because I won't be able to differentiate, right? Patio lights are a great example of inability to differentiate, right? It's a 48-foot string of, you know, I could put different bulbs in and I could maybe make it a little bit different, but it wasn't enough of a differentiation that I could charge a premium to make enough margin for it to make sense in the business. So I think one concept that I love, and I'm sure you've read this book probably, Norm, is Built to Sell. And that concept is, we build each brand that we're able to sell it if we choose to, but we don't have to, right? So this is a good structure I got from my buddy, Steve Simonson. You know Steve?
Buddies, absolutely.
I love Steve, love Steve. So years ago, I said, Steve, how do you keep all of your employees over these long period of time? You've sold businesses. How did you keep the same core group? And I learned this from him. We have one core entity and each brand is around it and they pay that entity almost like it's an agency or a brand manager, but I own all of them. So if I want to sell one of the brands, I can peel it off. The financials are clean. I don't lose any of my employees. That structure has been amazing and allow us that opportunity that if we want to sell a brand, it's very, very easy to sell one off or to add a brand as we look to buy and add a brand in. We just plug them into the processes you already talked about with the SOPs and the procedures that we already have, so we can kind of plug and play. And I think of them as like almost like Legos in the business idea.
Ah, so I got to tell you my Steve Simonson story.
All right.
I know nothing about nothing. That's, you know, that's Steve. So I'm at ASM3, I think, walking out with my buddy Riz, and we're going to the airport. This guy comes out and says, hey, can I share a cab with you? Sure. It was Steve. So we're in the cab, and Riz and I, at that time, we thought we were pretty good with e-commerce. We were fairly successful. So he's asking us, you know, so what do you do? And we're telling him. So he said, we asked him what he did. And he said, oh, you know, I do a bit of this. I do a bit of that. You know, Steve, I know I do a bit of this. I do a bit of that. He says, yeah, I remember my first day I sold something on Amazon. I was excited. He says, then I remember when I've had my first $1,000 month. So that was cool. And I remember my first $10,000 month That was pretty awesome. We got it up to 100,000. I said, how much better can it get? It was really, you know, it was great. $100,000. We hit $1 million. This is still on the way to the airport. We hit $1 million 1 month, and Riz and I are looking at each other going, what the hell? Who's in this car with us? And then as we're getting out, we're pulling out our bags, and he goes, yeah, I was in London with my wife, and somebody called and said we had our first $1 million day. Now we had, you know, multiple $1 million days. It's like, are you crazy? Like, who did? So he ended up giving us his card. And about 6 months later, I gave him a call. I just reached out to him and I said, hey, you remember me? I was in your cab. And we've become, you know, really good friends since then. But by the way, he's got some great apps that people should be looking into. You know, person money, you know, that's something that a lot of people should be taking a look at. It's everything you need to run a business. But here's another thing. So I got off on a Steve story, but the finger on the pulse, you've got multiple companies. How I've heard people say there's no way that you can run or manage multiple companies at once. How can you? How do you keep the finger on the pulse of these companies to make them successful?
Okay. Number one, you better know what is important to your business. You need to know KPIs. Number two, you better have a system in place. We built our own internally. You know, I wish somebody had built a really high quality dashboard for years, right? I should have probably built it myself a few years ago, but we just built our own, right? So we use Power BI. We built out our own dashboards. I hired a guy who knew how to build Power BI dashboards. I told him what I wanted in the reports, and we built it out. And that is how we run the business. That keeps us on track every single day of what is important, what's working, what's not working. And then as new pieces of data come out, you know, SQP, search query performance, or SFR, or whatever comes out, that new data comes available to us, we integrate that new data into the dashboard so that, you know, most people are not very comfortable with just the raw data, right? So dashboards, in my opinion, are just visualizations of data. Yeah. And everybody can look at a graph and kind of understand the basics of what a graph means. So we just try to understand, can a 10-year-old read this? And can a 10-year-old understand what's important? That's kind of our metric. And if that's capable, then everybody's on the same page and we're all rowing in the right direction.
See, that's where I start doing the happy dance. When you show me any line items, that's one thing. When you show me a graph, it's like, oh yeah, now we can talk.
Everybody can get it. It's easy. If you do a graph the right way, I don't care if it's a bar chart or line graph, you do a graph the right way, everybody gets it.
Give me a little bit of color, not monochrome, even better.
Yep. Yeah. We're simple. We use green, yellow, red, buddy. Everybody knows green's good. Red's bad. Yellow's in between.
Oh, that's perfect. Okay. I pretty much run out of questions. Anything that you want to add before we go over to the wheel?
You know, I think first of all, I'd say everybody give themselves some congratulations. If you're an entrepreneur, no matter what part of your journey you're in, give yourself a pat on the back. I mean, a lot of people, this is the path not chosen. I know a lot of people over the years that talk about being an entrepreneur for 5, 10 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, I call them wantrepreneurs, Norm. They want to be an entrepreneur and they just don't take action, right? And I think, first of all, if you're at that stage where you've already made the choice or taken the action, please, you know, give yourself a pat on the back. Give yourself some grace. Be generous with yourself. It's going to be up and down. And then the other thing is just really go out and meet people. Build a network of people that are like-minded. Steve Simonson, a great, great example. Great human that is always constantly trying to add value to people. You know what I mean? And that, those are the kind of people you want to associate with.
Yeah, I can't agree more. Okay, people want to get in contact with you. How do they do it?
LinkedIn, probably the easiest way to do it. You know, we've started a podcast recently called The Rob Green Show, and it's really talking about health, wealth, and relationships, but we really try to focus more on business case studies. I've been diving into more of like, what's this challenge of this business? And we're doing not just e-com, we're doing, a friend of mine owns a PT clinic, another one owns a gym. We've done a lot of different types of businesses. And what is funny is how many of these different businesses have the same problems. Like we all have the same problems. It doesn't matter what the business in, and said, can you take something from somebody else's success in another industry and apply it to your business? And it's been a really fun journey. I really enjoy doing it. So the Rob Green Show or find me on LinkedIn will be the two best ways.
Fantastic. I just noticed that a question came in. Kels, can you read it?
Yeah, this one is from Rad. Why do some products sell on trade shows and not on e-commerce? We learn from our customers that our products are for Walmart customers. We tried and we are happy.
So let me try to tackle that, I guess. So why do they sell on trade shows and not e-commerce? It could be a lot of different reasons for that. I mean, I think about demand as a river, and I want to step in front of it. Just because there's demand for a product, it doesn't mean it's going to be e-commerce relative, right? Most products are, but maybe it's too large. Maybe it weighs too much, right? Maybe it's too inexpensive. And so if it's too cheap, it might not work for e-commerce because there's not enough margin. I mean, domestic shipping in the US is one of the biggest cogs we have, especially of heavy products. And if you're selling a product for $7, $8, it's really difficult to be profitable unless it's the size of a paperclip. So there can be a lot of different reasons for it, but understanding where your customers are, I mean, different products are different marketplaces serve different customers. You know, the Walmart customer is not exactly the same as the Amazon customer. Mm-hmm. And now TikTok Shop's customers are not the same as the Amazon or the Walmart customer either. So understanding the marketplace and where your products fit best is really critical to success.
Perfect. So Kels, if there's no more questions, I am going to do the seller basics read. All right. I guess I'm doing the read. All right. Hey, Amazon sellers, ever faced with account suspensions, ASIN hiccups, or IP headaches? Introducing Seller Basics, your Amazon accounts guardian, which is $99 a month, or use code NORM, $89 a month. Seller Basics offers a dedicated team to shield your business from these challenges. Plus, this membership offers free legal consultations from seasoned e-commerce attorneys. No long-term contracts, cancel with just a month's notice. View Seller's Basics as your Amazon account's health plan. You can check out Seller Basics at sellerbasics.com. Now, for the disclaimer, Seller Basics is not an insurer or law firm. Consultations come from independent firms. Results may vary. Membership is needed before events leading to claims, and terms apply. All right, let's head to the wheel.
It's time for the Wheel of Health.
All right, let's spin the wheel.
All right, so thank you everyone for entering. We're going to shuffle these up. If you are the winner, please email me, k@lunchwithnorm.com, and we'll connect you with your prize. And it looks like it is Pyro.
All right. Congrats, Pyro.
All right. So, Pyro, if you can email me, k@lunchwithnorm.com, we'll connect you with your press release. Congratulations.
By the way, Rob, Pyro is one of the people that tried out the Tariff Terminator.
Oh, yeah?
And I think Pyro, I'm not 100% sure, but he's one of the people that saved a ton. I think it was $7,000 on a shipment.
I think
that's what it was. Yeah.
I appreciate sharing that story. I love to hear when the full circle of these conversations and end up saving people money. It's awesome.
Yeah. Want more great information? Don't forget to subscribe by clicking here. Also, if you want to check out our latest podcast, click over here. 100, 100, 100. Thank you.